Well, hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. Welcome back to the Paul Revere Show. You know, we started this show earlier this year to talk about democracy in Wisconsin, democracy in the United States. And on June 24, 2022, our democracy changed in a very fundamental way. Rights that women have had for almost 50 years, you know, the huge hunk of my lifetime, just evaporated, just disappeared. And we're going to spend tonight's show talking about the implications of this decision by the U.S. Supreme Court and what it means. And I'm really, really honored and delighted to have Kelda Royce, Senator from, 36? Is that, am I right?
26, close enough.
26, excuse me. There we go, right? We're fallible. With us here to talk about the issues.
Recording Kelda, in progress.
Kelda told us or warned us over a year ago that this day was imminent, and here we are. So welcome, Kelda, and maybe just before we jump in, introduce yourself to our listeners, you know, what you're doing currently and how you got here and what your involvement with this key issue has, or these key issues have been over the years.
Good to be with you, Mark. I too am an attorney, and I was the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Wisconsin for 4 years. So I've been working on this issue and warning people about the risk to Roe v. Wade for my entire adult life. I then served a couple terms in the assembly. I started a small business, and now I serve the people of Madison in the Wisconsin State Senate.
So let's jump into it. As someone that's been watching this issue, as a woman who is completely involved, as a, you know, this decision impacts women more than anybody else in one way. What happened on June 24th? What happened with the Supreme Court? And what do you think its implications are?
Well, the Supreme Court traded away its legitimacy for the rights, the well-being, and the health of every single woman in this country. And they decided to go against all precedent, go against what they had sworn up and down under oath at their confirmation hearings they would not do. And they jettisoned 50 years of precedent and the long line of cases even before that that had talked about the right to privacy. And obviously we don't want a government that is so powerful it can fit inside your uterus in your doctor's office. And they did so to impose their narrow religious views on all the rest of us, an unwilling majority of Americans. And the only reason that they were able to do that is because we have a form of government, as you well know, that gives the minority inordinate power over the majority. And specifically, it magnifies the political power of Republicans, the way that the Senate is composed, the Electoral College, and the rampant gerrymandering that we've seen and voter suppression over the last decade has really entrenched Republican power in a way that they feel totally free to impose their will on the rest of us, even if we don't want it, because they know they can't very well face accountability at the ballot box, because they've got unequal power.
So let's just sort of go back. You've been studying this issue and its history and the issue of women's control over their reproductive systems, reproductive rights. How does this match up historically? You know, the majority's decision written by Alito really touches on, I think, and create sort of new facts as opposed to real facts.
Yeah, it's really stunning. And I think sometimes the way it's reported it's reported by people who don't actually know the history. And so they just sort of take what he says at face value. Alito has manufactured basically a cherry-picked alternate history that did not occur. It's no surprise that abortion wasn't mentioned in the Constitution when women weren't people, Black people weren't people. You know, it was written by wealthy white men for one purpose, which was to put together a government that would be limited in its ability to interfere in individual liberty. But that said, abortion was common. It was a normal part of people's reproductive lives. There were open advertisements during the time of the founding and really up till the mid 1800s, you know, abortion was pretty normal. There were tinctures and herbs and midwives that would help people restore their menses. That's what they talked about, restoring your period. And it really was with the medical community, physicians were sort of moving away from their past as barbers and trying to professionalize and trying to shut out competition, especially from midwives and herbalists who had traditionally provided a great deal of care to women. They really wanted to consolidate power and shut out the competition, and criminalizing abortion was one way that they could do that. It also, the arguments that were used to criminalize abortion back in the mid 1800s were some of the same kinds of racist arguments that you see today. The anxiety about a declining white Protestant birth rate and the hordes of immigrants coming, you know, in that case from Ireland or from Italy or other places where there would be a lot of Catholics that were having a lot of babies. And so the same kinds of racist and, you know, animosity towards outside groups was used that we're still seeing today in the modern right-wing political movements.
So the in terms of your analysis and study of the past, when did it really get this sort of religious overtone that sort of driven the question? And it's really, it's sort of created a schism within the Christian community, mm-hmm. you know, between, you know, the this sort of a very fundamentalist evangelicals versus the, mm-hmm. the mainline Protestant churches. How did you see that develop?
This is a shocking thing to, I think, so many people who see this as really a fundamental religious question, or, you know, people's faith practices. When does life begin? All this stuff. None of these early criminal laws had anything to do with concern about fetal life or embryos or anything like that. Instead, in the 60s and 70s, what you had were racist white churches that were concerned they were going to lose their tax-exempt status. They wanted to maintain that and continue building political power. And they saw Roe v. Wade and the issue of abortion as a really cynical way to functionally trick people into voting for Republicans so that they could goose the vote and increase their political power. And it was a totally deliberate strategy. It was manufactured, the idea that we're going to basically manipulate people into doing our political bidding. And that's the origin of the modern anti-choice movement, you know, in the years just before and after Roe v. Wade. And unfortunately, you know, the crazies are now driving the bus and they're now occupying a majority of seats on the Supreme Court.
So let's sort of get to this schism. I think I was reading, it's like over 66%, 67% of the eligible voters. Is that the right number or?
I mean, over the decades, the numbers have been very consistent. 2/3 of Americans want to see Roe v. Wade upheld. And the numbers go up even more if you say, you know, should abortion be legal in any circumstance, some circumstances, right? So there are people who say, I'm pro-life, but I think it should be legal in X, Y, and Z situations. Well, guess what? Then you don't want to see abortion become a crime nationwide in all circumstances, which is what is now the goal of the Republican Party.
So you know, this is really sort of astounding to me because Blackmun wrote Roe v. Wade. I mean, he was at the time a conservative and a Republican appointee, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and it was not a controversial decision. It was 7-2. They, you know, they had a broad majority of the court, and it really was not, you know, the bombshell that I think people thought it was, right? People, you know, physicians were in favor of it. Clergy were in favor of it. They worked to obtain safe abortion care for women with the underground network because they had seen the terrible implications of women dying from unsafe, illegal abortions.
So we have a half a century, and we have six, you know, 2/3 of America that really believed in the status quo mm-hmm. before Dobbs, before this decision last week. The first impact, right, is going to be those folks that are like right now thinking about what do I do if I'm in a situation where I'm considering an abortion. Right. So in the state, what happens to folks right now in terms of that immediate threat?
So last Friday, all of the current abortion providers in Wisconsin basically said we're taking a pause. It's unclear how or whether the 1849 criminal abortion ban that was still in the statute books is going to be employed. And so we're going to coordinate abortion care for people out of state safely. Now, we're in a very different situation than we were in the 60s and 70s. Thank goodness. We have safe medication abortion that people can safely access online, and they can self-manage their abortions. It is safer than Tylenol. You want to make sure you're going to a reputable site because there are a lot of anti-choice fake sites out there. But Aid Access, like I'm going to aid you and help you, aidaccess.org is probably the best one. And they will, you can fill out a questionnaire. You can even get an advanced prescription for an abortion and just keep it in your medicine cabinet in case you or someone you love needs it. So a lot of women, a lot of people are doing that. I did that so that I would have one on hand if someone I love needed an abortion. And it's undetectable. It's the same as a spontaneous miscarriage. So if you somehow need follow-up treatment, you could just go and say, you know, I'm bleeding, I'm not sure why, or my pregnancy is miscarrying.
So we're coming up on the break, Kelda. And folks, we're here with Kelda Royce, a state senator, a leader of women in our state, of the progressive voice. And on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about what we can do to address this. Look at some, they just took over a bunch of rights and they're taking them over. And it's about democracy, folks. So we'll be back about saving our democracy. Folks, this is the Paul Revere Show. We are here on Devil's Radio 92.7 FM. We're here every Monday night. I'm here tonight with Kelda Royce, state senator, and we're talking about the drastic change that just happened to America that a lot of us are trying to figure out how we got here and where we're going to go with the reversal of Roe v. Wade. So, welcome back again, Kelda. So what are the implications of this decision and where do we go? Let's spend this next section on what can we expect, mm-hmm. what can we do, and what are young progressives like you doing to point us the right direction?
Well, first I want to say that, you know, we have incredible activists all over this country that have mobilized to help people receive abortion care. And that has been true for many, many years, because let's be honest, abortion has been heavily restricted and unavailable for millions of women, and disproportionately women of color, low-income people, young women and girls, immigrants. So we already know that, what it's like to help facilitate abortion care for people in difficult situations. And now we're all going to have to pitch in and redouble those efforts. So, you know, giving to our local abortion fund, the, you know, Women's Medical Fund, volunteering as an abortion doula or to drive or provide childcare for people who need abortion care, all of these kinds of grassroots things I think are really important. And there are ways that we can channel our rage and our fury. But I think it's important to be clear that this is a political problem, right? This is not something that came out of thin air. This is not the last word on the Constitution, as if, you know, these guys get to say, you know, what we do with our bodies. Reproductive autonomy is a fundamental human right. And you don't get to take it away just by being a politician or by getting a black robe. Absolutely not. And we will continue to fight this, and we will fight it in the courts and in the streets and at the ballot box and online and everywhere else. So this is really the call to action. The first and most important thing we need to do is make sure that we're not just voting in November for pro-choice candidates like Governor Tony Evers, like Attorney General Josh Call, both of whom have been stalwart defenders and champions of reproductive freedom, and have said that they will not allow doctors to go to prison on their watch. We also need to get rid of Ron Johnson, who is a cancer on the U.S. Senate and on our state. So that's job one, right? And voting is not enough, right? You got to get out there. You got to knock doors. You got to tell your friends. You got to write letters to the editor. You've got to get involved in these campaigns, because we're up against an ocean of special interest money and, you know, a bunch of Trumpers that are also energized, right? That are really excited about this decision because, you know, it means that they get to have one over on mouthy women and that, you know, they get off on that. They love that. So the second thing, in Wisconsin, we've been suffering under 10 years of gerrymandering and Republican rule that, again, is manufactured. It's not a reflection of the will of the people, right? We have to remember that we're the majority. We're the reasonable ones. We're the ones who embody the American dream and American values of freedom, live and let live, right? The only way we can actually have a functioning society. So we can take that righteous knowledge and translate it into our electoral work. Next spring, we're going to have the opportunity to flip the Wisconsin Supreme Court from 4-3 conservative to 4-3 liberal. And we could elect a justice who will protect our rights, who will be concerned about privacy and access to healthcare, and who can look at the gerrymandering that's happened in the state and say, like, maybe this actually deprives people of their right to vote and their right to representative government. So we could solve a lot of things over the next year with respect to restoring legal abortion access and addressing the gerrymandering. And, you know, that I would say it gives me a lot of hope. As much anger and despair as I felt over the last, you know, couple of weeks and months with this decision coming forward, I also feel a lot of hope about it and about our capacity to change.
I share that hope too, because just in my talking to friends and family, there is a real. For example, I was up in Green Bay, up in De Pere, for a wedding. And the a niece. So it's the younger generation. I'm sorry, they're like younger than you, Kelda.
Many people are these days, Mark.
and so.
My children remind me on a daily basis.
they were, you know, they're like in their 20s, and they're saying, how can this happen, right? That all of a sudden what I thought was just my right, and that's the way it was and would always be, is all of a sudden gone. So, I mean, there is this wake up call.
It's so hard to contemplate, you know, and I think what's even harder for people to realize is that this is not the end point, right? The Republicans aren't stopping here. They didn't, you know, they're not high-fiving and going home. The very night that the Dobbs draft was leaked, it was also reported that Republicans in Washington, D.C. were meeting to plan out a nationwide abortion ban as soon as they get control of Congress and the presidency.
Right. And I think I spent a little time looking at the decision. I haven't gotten through the 200 plus pages yet, but I did read Justice Thomas, you know, his concurrence. I mean, and he sort of laid out the gauntlet of where he thinks the court's going to go. You know, there's a case, folks out there, called Griswold. It was decided 1965, right, on the right of married persons to obtain contraceptives.
Right.
Think about that, folks. He has said that maybe that's next.
And, you know, I have to tell
people. Mind-boggling, right?
It is mind-boggling. But, you know, when I was at NARAL 15 years ago, I was lobbying against attempts to criminalize birth control, attempts to try to regulate birth control as if it were abortion. So this has not been a secret. This has been long-term aims of the anti-choice movement. They're not going to stop with a nationwide abortion ban. They are going after birth control. We've seen it in state legislatures around the country today. They will go after IVF, you know, reproductive technology, if you desperately want to make a family.
And they're going to go after same-sex marriages.
Yes, they will. They will go after same-sex marriage and sex between consenting adults, sodomy laws.
So, Kelda, thank you so much for being here. We're going on break. We'll have you back soon. Thank you so much for keeping the fight alive and keeping hope alive. So we'll be right back, folks. Thank you, Kelda.
Bye.com.
Hello, folks. This is Mark Thompson, attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show, folks. 5:40 a.m., 101 or 92.7 FM every Monday night at 7 p.m. We're here tonight focused in on the Supreme Court's decision on June 24th, reversing and overruling Roe v. Wade, which was the law for almost 50 years that gave women the right to choose and control their reproductive rights. Most folks had really thought that was sort of a settled right and woke up, found out that the news leak was right, that there were this five folks on the Supreme Court were going to get rid of Roe, and they did. I had the pleasure of having Kelda Royes from the state Senate on the first half, and I'm really honored and privileged to have Greta Neubauer, another one of our progressive leaders in the state and the current minority leader in the assembly. Good evening, Greta. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really grateful to be here and be able to talk about what's going on in Wisconsin.
So, as a young woman, as a young leader in the assembly, how have you seen this play out? What's the, you know, sort of the public response, and what are you hearing on the streets?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. So right after the draft leaked, we organized a rally in Racine, and I went out a couple days later, and many people came to downtown Racine who were angry, who were despairing, who wanted to know what they could do to take action. And I had three people come up to me at that rally and talk to me about what it was like to live before Roe v. Wade. And I've heard a little bit about this because my grandmother actually did reproductive rights work prior to Roe v. Wade and after Roe v. Wade with Planned Parenthood in Minnesota, experienced bomb threats, you know, sort of the full scope of that history. But I talked to these three people, one of whom said, I accessed an abortion prior to Roe v. Wade. I was very grateful that it was a positive experience for me and it all worked out okay. Another said, I had a botched abortion, and I was very concerned that I would never be able to have children. And the third person said that she was a social worker prior to Roe, and she worked with an 11-year-old girl who was a victim of incest, who became pregnant, And they were very concerned that she would not live through delivering her child. Thankfully, she did. But that really brought home for me, you know, what we face. And I think I grew up hearing these stories about my grandma and the work that she did, and just never imagined, frankly, that we would be in this moment. You know, Kelda may have imagined that, you know, folks were reading the signs, but I'm still stunned. And I think so many people are, because it is not very common in this country to have a right enshrined in the law or by the courts and then have that explicitly removed. So, you know, I continue to hear that anger, that despair, and also that deep commitment from so many people to continue fighting for reproductive rights for all of us. And I'm already in conversations with people locally in Racine and statewide about what comes next in the fight.
So let's sort of turn to that. What do you see coming down the road in terms of the fight, and what can each of us start to do or do to really get our way back to a more perfect union, a union where all of us have equal rights? And you know, we've been trying to get there for a long, long time, and it seems like this court wants us to take us back. So what do you see down the track?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll share, I was talking to some folks here in Racine today, and we were thinking of this as sort of three different prongs of the work. The first being advocacy. We, of course, need to repeal the criminal abortion ban in Wisconsin. And that is going to be a long fight, I think, unfortunately. We can't make that happen tomorrow. But we need to continue to keep the pressure on elected officials and make clear that those who stand against abortion are not with the majority, and that we will hold people accountable. We will show up at the Capitol. We will advocate against more restrictive laws on contraception or other privacy issues. We need to continue to demonstrate that the public stands for comprehensive access to healthcare, including reproductive rights. Secondly, we need to get involved politically. You know, Kelda talked a little bit about this, but we have to make sure that Governor Evers is reelected. We need to make sure that we do not lose Governor Evers' veto power in the Assembly and Senate, which means hanging on to our numbers as we go into the fall elections and hopefully adding more seats and moving towards a majority. And then I would say, finally, it's direct care, right? It is recognizing that, you know, I'm here in Racine, we're close to Illinois. It is not a crime to help someone access a legal abortion in Illinois. And I know that many people are looking for ways to support transportation or other expenses, supporting people to get the care that they need in a way that is safe and accessible. So I see those as sort of the three different avenues that we all have to get involved and to advocate. And over the coming days and weeks, I know that those opportunities will be in front of all of us, and we will continue to share those as we go forward.
So, you know, the work in front of us is really, really sort of monumental in a way. And let's just spend a little time talking about your first point in terms of repealing the, you know, the abortion ban. I don't know if it's sunk in yet, but I think a lot of folks still don't understand that we're looking at now as a law that was in effect in 1849, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yep.
I mean, you know, to think about just that conceptually, that that's a law that is going to govern us in 2022, I mean, we only became a state in 1848.
Right. I mean, as Kelda said, many of us were not considered people who should have equal access to rights in 1849. And to think that that form of government, right, that was so unrepresentative, would be deciding how we live our lives now is it's hard to take. It's hard to take.
No, but I think we have to figure out how to get that point home to folks, right? 1849, women didn't have a right to vote, right? So this is a law that was passed by men only, mm-hmm. right? And you would think that there would be moderate Republicans that would question that whole premise. What are you hearing from moderate Republicans?
Yeah, well, you know, what the numbers show in Wisconsin is that there is overwhelming majority support for access to reproductive health care. And seeing as Wisconsin is a state that's really quite evenly divided in terms of partisanship and partisan identification, what that means is that there are a number of people who typically vote Republican who support access to abortion.
Right. And a significant number, right? I mean,
yes. Yes.
I mean, if we look at the last two presidentials, the difference between the Republican and the Democratic candidates, you know, who won are virtually 20,000 some votes. And then when you're talking about two thirds, we're talking about tens of thousands of people that are obviously not, you know, Democrats.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think it's incumbent on us, you know, as elected officials and advocates to reach those folks, right? And to remind them that they can get involved, that they can reach out to their elected officials. You know, as you all were discussing earlier, Wisconsin is very gerrymandered. And what that means is that Republican legislators have a significant majority in the Senate and Assembly, despite typically not getting a significant majority of the votes, right? What that does mean, though, is that there are Republican voters in districts represented by Republican legislators who have the power right now to really put some pressure on those elected officials, right? And we know that it's partisan out there, right? It's hard to break ranks. But we also know that elected officials are moved when people show up and when people call and when people make clear that they don't agree with their elected officials' position on an issue. And so I do think it's absolutely incumbent on all of us to create opportunities for folks to engage in the coming months when we get back into legislative session, in particular in January, to provide, again, those opportunities for folks to engage and show up and make clear their position on reproductive health care.
You know, you touch on this issue of how gerrymandered we are, and it sort of ties into this point that you made about that it's so important in November to reelect Tony Evers as governor and to also maintain a veto-proof numbers in the Senate and the Assembly, right?
And exactly. Yeah.
You know, the governor did call a special session to try to address this, right? Tell my listeners what happened.
Yes. So the governor called this special session for last Wednesday, so 2 days before the final decision came out on Roe v. Wade. And Republicans did not even come into the Capitol to talk with us about the issue. Now, I think the very least that they could do, given that many people have just lost significant rights, is come to the Capitol and have a conversation, right? But they didn't even do that. They gaveled in and they gaveled right out of the special session in the Senate and then the Assembly, which means that we will not be considering overturning the 1849 abortion ban in the legislature at this time. We will, of course, continue to push for reconsideration of that issue and to codify our rights. But Republicans at this point do not even seem willing to have that conversation with us.
All right, Greta, we are going to go to a break and then we're going to come back. And hey, folks, I'm here with Greta Neubauer, the Assembly Minority Leader, one of the upcoming superstars of the Democratic Party, progressive voice. We'll be right back, folks, to talk more about what we can do after we lost our rights with the overruling of Roe v. Wade. We'll be right back. Well, hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We're here on the Devil's Radio every Monday night at 7 p.m., 5:40 a.m., 101 or 92.7 FM. I'm here with Greta Neubauer, who is one of our superstars for progressive causes in the state of Wisconsin, minority leader of our assembly. And so, Greta, we were talking about the fact that the governor and Democrats had favored a special session to address this impending law coming down. What else has our governor done? I've heard that he's talking about clemency. We have our Attorney General Josh Call. What have they said about this issue, and what do you see, going forward in that regard?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So Governor Evers has committed to provide clemency for those who are charged with providing or aiding in provision of an abortion here in Wisconsin. And Josh Call, our attorney general, and a number of district attorneys around the state have said that they will not be committing any resources towards prosecuting those who provide abortions. So this is really good news. This is very important, of course, and another reason why we really need to reelect Governor Evers and Josh Call. You know, what I will say in addition, though, is that this unfortunately does not provide enough legal certainty for clinics in Wisconsin to remain open, because it's not clear, right, if a district attorney and another community could prosecute, right, or would choose to do so in your local area, or someone could choose to prosecute after, right, retroactively. So again, what that means is that as of Friday, all of the clinics have temporarily suspended providing abortions. People would need to go to other states to access that care. But we know what would happen if Governor Evers was not reelected or Josh Call was not reelected, and that is that we would very likely have people in those roles who would take an absolutely different approach and probably do everything they could to prosecute and perhaps again expand this restriction on reproductive care as Kelda really laid out.
It's clear from the tone of Justice Thomas and the majority decision that they are not done with this rollback of individual rights and our right to liberty. How do you see that playing out, and how do you see that as a real focus on getting folks organized, grassroots, in terms of dealing with the elections, right? We got primaries coming up in August, and we have huge elections in November, then next April for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. How do you see those issues playing out?
Yeah, so, a couple weeks ago, not long after the draft leaked, I was knocking on doors and I ran into a man who I know pretty well in Racine, who's in gay marriage. And he said to me, what should I do? You know, can I take any steps to protect my marriage? And so, you know, of course we looked into it and we followed up and then yesterday I went to Pride in Racine and I saw him again after the decision had come out. And, you know, Thomas, as you said, laid out, you know, potential other action. And it broke my heart, frankly, to have a conversation with him in which he essentially said, like, I'm emotionally preparing for this to be taken away, for my marriage to be taken away from me. And, you know, we don't know what will happen next, but I think for people who are directly impacted by, you know, these privacy rights, which is many of us in one form or another, we're now having to ask ourselves these questions, you know, and I have constituents here who are saying, is there anything else I can do to protect my marriage? And, you know, what do I need to get in place legally in case this is taken away from me? And, you know, another thing that this man said was just really that for him, you know, he's an older guy, a lot of it is just about the dignity of his marriage. And to have that taken away would be so difficult. So, you know, I'm at Pride yesterday and seeing all of these young people in Racine and a lot of older folks as well. And just hearing about the fear that people have in this moment, you know, the ways that these issues intersect, you know, people there who are trans, who say, you know, they too can get pregnant, right? And that causes all sorts of complications in terms of their gender identity and dysphoria. So it's just opening up so many challenges in Wisconsin and across the country. But it also means that we can come together around this fight. And, you know, I've seen that. I was at the Wisconsin Democrats convention this weekend. And then, as I said, back in Racine at Pride and just seeing the determination that people have to care for one another, to look out for each other, to fight for, you know, our collective rights. It was incredibly moving. You know, on Friday when the decision came out, what I wanted to do was crawl under the covers, right? I think many of us probably felt that way. But I'm so grateful that I got to see so many people in Wisconsin who, you know, were just already to come out and to figure out what our next steps are and to take action. And I feel really confident in that spirit, you know, that Wisconsinites will continue to show up and will continue to fight until our rights are restored.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, we're coming up on July 4th, right? So for years, we would sit around and we'd have the kids read the Declaration of Independence and, you know, talk about it. And it really has made me think about how I talk to my kids about the Declaration of Independence and what's at stake. Because, you know, we forget that out of this Declaration of Independence created a constitution, and this constitution actually, right, women didn't vote. We had slavery. It was really, really an undemocratic place in many, many ways. And I'm going to give you the last word here, Greta. We got 20 seconds. Take us home here on Independence Day, and what do we have to do to get rid of our tyranny? And now you got 15.
As has been said, there is nothing more American than protest and continuing to expand our rights. It's been true throughout our history that many
people... There we go. Thank you.